Friends everywhere.
A great many things have happened since last Monday. I managed to lose my gilet. And my cap.
As long as it wasn't jaune.
Huh?
As long as the gilet wasn't jaune.
No, it wasn't a jaune. It was too boring anyway.
Gilet jaune.
So, but I couldn't find it. Couldn't come back. Then, there was an interesting, particularly interesting meeting at the Curra, where the brand new grandstand was opened by the Aga Khan and our T-shirt. And very interesting racing. Now look, I've got them a passage, a prose passage here, which I wanted to read in the past, but I have no reason for doing it really. About the Italian family. How like the Italian family is our family would be a question that you could put yourself to the trouble of thinking about. David Gilmour, very fine historian, and so on. The benefits of belonging to an Italian family far outweigh the drawbacks. In his book, La Bella Figura, Beppe Severnini enumerated them, starting with the family as a bank, lending its children money without interest for buying cars, homes, and holidays. Next, it is a form of insurance coverage with no policy to sign, and an employment agency that allows children to inherit their parents' professions. Two-fifths of Italian dentists and half of its engineers have simply taken over from their family fathers. As long as the children are qualified, this may not matter, but nepotism is a problem in universities and medical schools, and so on for a bit. And then, some of the benefits traditionally offered by the family have been eroded by modernity and contemporary life. It was easier, as Severnini pointed out, for the family to be a residential care home in a farmhouse than in the city flat. Though many Italians still manage to live very near their parents. The family used also to be a restaurant where you didn't have to reserve a table. But now that Mama no longer spent 7 hours in the table in the kitchen, as she did in 1950, it's a sort of snack bar where you can always get something to eat. Yet it remains a dormitory when you're at university, average age of graduation, 28. And a bachelor pad for those between relationships. Half of Italian parents still live with adult children. Mm. Think about it.
Grazie. Thank you, Charles. And now we will have Savannah Goodman, please.
Recently, I was having some trouble with an online account on my computer, and when I called the IT guy, the very first question he asked me was, so what is the name of the first person you kissed? And I was like, that is weirdly personal. And then I realized that that was a security question that I answered, and I needed to like confirm my identity for him to help me out. So I was kind of thinking about these personal questions that we have to answer, these security questions, when we create any sort of online account. So I wrote this poem, and it's called Security Questions. What is your mother's maiden name? What is the name of your childhood best friend? What are the names of the 8 individual hamsters that you lived with in that tiny one-room apartment? And what is the name of the kid, the one who played Joseph when you were cast as Mary in the church's Christmas nativity scene? What is the name of the song your dad played through his headphones the morning he went for a walk to clear his head, he said, after the 2016 presidential election? What is the name of the horse you fell off of when the doctors gave you that straight line of black stitches under your nose? What is the name of the guy on that first date, that psychologist who had said to you, I actually think you have a lot of work to do on yourself before you should be in a relationship. But, you know what? I'm still willing to give it a try. What is the name of the make and model of your first car? The one you drove to your part-time job serving ice cream on the beach to sandy children? And what are the names of the kids you watched play in the park in the neighborhood where you heard gunshots every weekend? And what is your mother's maiden name? Thanks.
Thank you, Savannah. And now we will have Philip Spillara.
Thank you. So I'm going to read the poem I read up last time because it needed a bit of work, and I took out a lot of big words because a lot of it's like, I'm going to leave the poem speak to itself, but there's a lot of big words that are related to plastic and polymer and all stuff like that, and I had to do a bit of research and all that. Hope you like it. I was buried in transparency. Sauropod cranes would have steepled here against an industrial blackened sky. The beach was fertilized in fossilized plastic, swallowed up by an emerald stained wave. Armored dozers and rubbish trucks embosses and brings more and more and more. And above in the heavens, someone would have punctured holes in all the black bags, littering thousands of pied nurdles, hailing a coughing sandstorm, mummifying me in the alchemy of refined petroleum. I would have inhaled slow doses of ethene and digested polylithene, causing my organs to shrivel up to a sculpture of a jellyfish floating out in the skin of the tide within a plastic sarcophagus. Once we were all buried like this. It was like an artistic graveyard upon a polyclinfilm ocean. Our soil horizon is a spoil of landfills built on bricks of lunchboxes. The archaeologists who dug me up prized me of a specimen of the polymer age. The truth is, our words were written on rustic silicon chips, slated in servers, but without power, or hollow. So the digital age was a mirage, as much as the Renaissance was a time when God walked among man. I lived and died picking Cadbury snack wrappers from ash trees, like I was taking thorns from their roots, saying I was doing my bit.
Thank you, Philip. Next we'll have Amy.
So this one is called A Dream of How I Became the Moon. I'm standing there. To my right stands my son, his hair is dark. To my left stands my daughter, her smile is bright. We are holding hands, and I cannot tell which is mine and which are my children's hands. You are standing before me, and your forehead touches mine. We are so close to each other, so near. Your breath is warm, and it moves the little hair on my skin. For a moment, all is at peace. We are family. We are tribe. Then the little hands start disappearing. It is just sand running through my fingers until I hold nothing anymore. It feels as if a dream that was sleeping inside my core suddenly is no more. And you are walking slowly, backwards, facing me. Your eyes don't see me. Yet you are looking at me as I become the moon. In the end, only I am there.
Cedric.
spiritual birth. Hold your breath. The five little girls have sat and are now silent. One has her cheeks swollen with air. The other, another at the end of the line they form, already show signs of unease. This is not the first time they have practiced this. They are yet to see the goal of the exercise. The teacher watches over them. Exhale. The five apprentices relax themselves, seemingly deflating inside of their loose robes. The one with the starry fabric raises her face in probe for her teacher and inquisition. She has a question. Before she forms a sentence to utter, the lecturer with a single finger raised interrupts. Here comes the answer. Squat down and feel the ground. Press enough that you cannot tear your hand from the sand. One girl giggles, the other one sneezes. The teacher waits until the time freezes. Rise and stand tall. Extend your hand as if catching that fall. Let the ground's energy be your friend. Allow it within. Exhale. Let it rise. Keep it in. Breathe in. The young ladies are now focused, ready. The old witch orders, now unleash. And like a spell, four hands immediately blossom into ferns and flowers, a splash of water, a flame and a spark. The last one remains empty, with a face in awe and a stare full of expectation. Unfazed, the old witch waits, confident that she too will find her recognition. And with a sneeze, it happens. An invisible turmoil of air emanating from her palm and fingertips blows everywhere, ruffling her blonde hair. The teacher smiles lightly. All of her daughters are finally born. This will be the only time.
Thank you, Cedric. And now we'll have our five-word champion, Sue Lou, please.
Very much. This is hot off the press, as in the computer and the printer. And like I said, I was in an environmental mood. It's called Curlew. You tell me of the call of the curlew, its curling cry haunting through the bogland. How it weaved through the mornings of your childhood, how it echoed through the darkness of your nights. The curlew's call has fallen silent, mottled messengers stolen over the years gone by. As the numbers of birds visiting the wetlands, drained now and laid dry, have plunged sheer into near extinction. The curlew's trilling song gone quiet with the winds, the melody of coastlines, harmony of the island, seeker of the sand, leaves behind a land void of music, luring the boy in the evening sun. You mourn the echoless silence in the mornings of your prime. No curlew calling evermore, no slender legs stalking the plains, no curving bill stoking the mud, the empty coastline still left behind at the end of dusk, nothing more than a memory.
Hear the music again.
Oh, let's hope.
Thank you, Sue. Next up, we'll have Patricia Walsh, please.
So, you heard a story about magpies, really like shiny things, and you have to go, and when you meet a magpie, you say, good day, magpie. This is called multiply magpie. Tearing and innards blasting through information, bejeweled chattels are a cause for concern. Walking by saluting the intelligent bird, counting one for disaster, upholding status. The use of pencils only, full time, full lure, cataloging property in a digital time. Seeing what was there before until now by me, sitting through photos and newspaper cuttings. Burning through books of the Westboro Assembly, a simpler form produced over a space of time. Fancy is just myself, walking through possessions, moving heaven and earth to stay long term. Free Cake Fridays is welcome from Bane, fighting to be killed at duty over record. Now speaking the desire to remain so, reputation at naught, conveyor belt is thrown away. The sky and the ground perfects to evening, a sojourn in the snow writing, cajoled to produce. We're rushing to publish while I'm still around. Pouring over rice pudding in a spare time. Politely hastening the bird's free call. Slightly showering, shaving its propriety. A single pint is calling right now. Murphy's whatever, setting records straight. Bleeding through injury at another's massacre. Insisting on jewellery for payments due. Thanks.
And next up, we will have Max Creedon, please.
She's left the room. She must have a trip up her table.
Woo! You know me, no, I'm trying to write during the night, so I'm writing during the night, so give me a bit of leeway.
There's a frame and you're in it. You freeze frame for a while and you're smiling and you're happy, or are you? There's a frame and you're in it. A moment of your life and you're captured, happy, snappy, or are you? And you feel like you've been framed. It's a skit, you've been pumped. Cause the storyline's the same, but the character is defunct. And you find your perfect shot, it's only wood and glass. Because it's a photo held with sticky tape. Cause it hurts like hell when you fall on your wrist. Can you frame a feeling? Is there boundaries to love? Keep the good stuff abstract and step off the bad stuff just above. And I want to know some. Leave behind the sun, going back to where it must be raining, and nothing changes. Things ain't half so bad, cause all these years of blue eyes will be waiting to smile their welcome. And I know this is where my whole story started. I know this is where it began. No one else in the world can claim their heart is sealed in the history of our time together. Going home to the mist of your home place in these pictures. You've captured a capsule of me. You have captured a time capsule in these moments we remember. Another time when we were you passed away. But for you, but for you.
A short and sad note to finish it up.
Thank you, Max. We have one more reader tonight, our performer, Jamie.
Okay, so my phone's dead, so here's one I hope I can remember on the top of my head.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't been here since the day I got my diagnosis. I suppose it's because I'm over where I was by head and shoulders. This old fortress, made of broken stone, fills me with a closeness to the lonely little kid who couldn't see beyond his nose. His cause was hopeless, so he'd run away to be alone, and he transposed his stuttered, cluttered thoughts and his emotions to the pad whereon he wrote them, and to put him in the zone, he would write them in a flow using the beats on his phone. Not so much a poet like a purist would use the word, more like Watsky or Shinoda, but to him distinction blurred, because hip-hop was a music genre, rap a style of vocals, and how could it be either when the verse was never heard? This is where our battered young man's battle starts in earnest, blessed and cursed with a brain that dealt with pain by getting further from the hurt, trying not to unearth it, which would be fine if I'd known the kind of mind I had to work with. So while the earth shook and the world took to driving in reverse, I found this old dark nook where I could write my words with each verse in the workbook, try to understand the madness and the sadness that I had to hand. And so I made my stand, the wall had to be manned, in its walls I had what my mentality demanded. This castle was my land, the world outside be damned, magic language sat at my command.
A fine home to end on. Oh, there's somebody waving at me from the back. Mo, get up here.
Sorry. I see the other issues.
Don't be sorry.
I was coming here, I was at the gig earlier on, so I couldn't make it. And I was sitting down there, and anyway, this poem came to my head just while I was sitting at the table there. And especially for the barmaiders downstairs now. They come on Monday to the lofty bar, a lofty crowd, it must be said. They stare like the stone horse. Horse on the counter at Doritos, spouting words from the heart and soul. I serve them drinks, mostly porter, black like their mood on most nights. I like the 5-word challenge. Fuck off out of here, I often feel like saying at closing time. I take my till and turn on the glass washer before I leave. I know it drives them cracked.
Abby, it's a real pity you walked in at the end of that one. It was especially for you. We have time, so yeah, go on.
For you, Abby, for you. Abby, this is for you. They come on Monday to the lofty bar, a lofty crowd, it must be said. They stare like the stone horse on the counter at the readers, spouting words from the heart and soul. I serve them drinks, mostly porter, black like their mood on most nights. I like the 5-word challenge. Fuck off out of here, I often feel like saying at closing time. I take my till and turn on the glass water. Before I leave, I know it drives them cracked.
Well, before she tells us to fuck out, off out of here, I suppose we're rounding the night up. I want to say thanks to everybody for being here and for taking part, and a special thanks to our guest readers, Dave Lucas and Philip Meters.